Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and has spent 43 years in diverse positions in the healthcare industry. Since 2009, he has been the Executive Vice President and the Chief Clinical Officer of Trinity Health. Trinity Health consists of 47 hospitals, 54,000 employees in 9 states, and is the 4th largest Catholic health system. His name? Dr. Terry O'Rourke. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Prisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Prisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the Executive Vice President and the Chief Clinical Officer of Trinity Health, Dr. Terry O'Rourke. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here.
You grew up in Detroit. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Yeah. I'm not sure an hour is enough, but would love to. Detroit, I grew up in the late 40s and 50s and 60s, and it was a wonderful town. Tigers and the Lions and going to Belle Isle and Palmer Park and all those things. And the cars were phenomenal, the excitement about the new cars coming out and wondering who was going to have fins or something new on the bumper or what have you. So it was a great childhood, and my mother was a nurse, had been an OR supervisor, and my father was a physician, a surgeon, and I had a sister that was 7 years younger than me. And we lived in the city and enjoyed the city and couldn't have asked for a better childhood.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Those are good questions. Well, I guess you could say from my father that was somewhat of a role model since I became a surgeon and a physician. But they were different people. My father was quiet, had sort of a dry sense of humor and was a great thinker and made careful decisions. My mother was more outgoing, emotional, aggressive. I think she not pushed, but encouraged me to succeed. So they both had attributes that I truly enjoyed.
When you walked back into this Fisher Theater, Fisher Building, what were your thoughts, Terry?
It brought back a flood of memories. I used to go to the Fisher Theater as my local movie theater when I was very young. Walked down here and wasn't seeing first-run Broadway plays. It was seeing Ma and Pa Kettle and things like that. So it's just wonderful memories. And I was very impressed with how well it's been maintained. It's a beautiful building, and it doesn't look that much different than it did 40, 50 years ago.
And neither do you. You had a fantastic childhood. Terry O'Rourke, when did you realize you wanted to be a physician, a doctor?
I don't know there was an exact date. Fortunately, my parents didn't push me towards medicine. I think they were happy that I chose that as a career, but they didn't push me towards it. One of the good things that they did do is that as I was growing up in the summers, I worked a variety of different jobs. I was a roofer one summer. I worked in a steel mill. I was a busboy, all different kinds of things. I came to appreciate having a job that really excited me, that I could want to get up early to go to, and that really caught my imagination. And as I went through school, I liked science, and so going into pre-med was sort of a natural. Getting to medical school, I wasn't going to be a surgeon, but I found out that I liked surgery more than other things. And so it wasn't any great master blueprint, but fortunately for me, I made the choices that gave me a great career, and I loved it.
We recently celebrated Memorial Day weekend. And from 1974 to 1976, you were the chief of general surgery at the U.S. Army Hospital in Fort Carson, Colorado. Terry O'Rourke, talk to us about the men and the women of our military.
They're great people. And first of all, I that was in the time of the draft, so I was drafted and spent 2 years in the Army at the end of Vietnam. It was one of the greatest things that happened to me. I got to see things and experience things that I never would have had otherwise. Taking care of a lot of those young men and women that had been injured in Vietnam and were back in the States, and hearing their stories and tales was inspiring. The other adventure I had was that for 4 months I was sent to one of the Vietnamese refugee camps. If you remember back in time, the boat people and people that came to this country, and we had camps to where they were housed and cared for until they could find a sponsor and be adopted into society. Talking to those people who all escaped under heroic circumstances, and many of whom lost family members in the process, was another wonderful piece that adds to the mosaic of your life, and I think gives you values and lets you appreciate democracy.
We're talking to Dr. Terry O'Rourke. When we come back, we'll ask him about his 30 years as a general surgeon. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dr. Terence O'Rourke, who's had 43 years of diverse senior executive operations experience in healthcare. Doctor, for 30 years, you were a general surgeon. Tell us about those three decades.
I keep repeating myself here, but I've had a lot of fortunate things happen to me, and certainly that was one of them. I practiced in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for the majority of the time, stayed there when I got out of the military, and practiced in a community hospital, but a very good community hospital that was a tertiary care hospital, and people came there for complicated medical problems. And I loved it. I loved it. The personal interaction with my patients and being in the community for a long period of time, I got to take care of families and had the opportunity to take care of the children of patients that I had taken care of. I got to know many people in the community with that. So that was fun. And the other part of medicine, of course, which is fun, is that it's always changing, it's always different, it's evolving, there's new technology. The laparoscopic surgery came in during the time that I was practicing, and so operations that we used to have to make big incisions and people would be in the hospital for a week, we then started doing through little tiny incisions, and they went home the same day or the next day. And so some remarkable advances in medicine and surgery over that period of time. You take something like breast cancer, which when I first started was a disease that only perhaps half of the people were cured, and they required a big mutilating operation, a radical mastectomy to treat them. To where now it's a small incision, all outpatient therapy, and 90% plus of the women that I took care of were cured. So I just a fun thing to do, and fun to be a part of a profession that had some remarkable advances.
You and your wife, Mary, and your family spent 30 glorious years in sun-filled Colorado. Why did you come back to Southeast Michigan three years ago?
3 years ago. Well, I had gotten into administrative medicine about 7 years ago and was on a hospital board and wound up as the chair of a hospital board, and then it became a regional hospital system in Colorado. And in that process, really, they talked me into becoming what's called a chief medical officer for that health system. And I came to enjoy that, gave up my practice, and had the opportunity to work with some really good people. And one of those people was a guy named Joe Swedish, who had been the CEO at that system, Centura. And he came here to Trinity about 5 years ago. And he talked to me, and so I followed him here 3 years ago. And it was a chance to work with Joe again, a chance to be part of a bigger system. And I must say, part of it was coming back to Detroit. That was also part of the mix.
Speaking of a bigger system, Trinity Health consists of 47 hospitals, 54,000 employees in 9 states, and is the 4th largest Catholic health system in America. What makes Trinity Health so special?
Well, it's the people, of course. We have wonderful people that work for Trinity, not only our employees, of which there are great, great people, some 10,000 of whom are nurses, but we have some 8,000 doctors that are on our medical staffs. And the chance to work with these people, many of whom I don't see on a day-to-day basis, but I see periodically and talk to them, is wonderful. We'd like to think that part of that is the culture in Trinity and our mission and our values, which were really set by the founders of the two systems that came together to form Trinity, the Sisters of Mercy here from Michigan and the Holy Cross Sisters from South Bend. Both of whom came to this country 150 years ago and established a culture around how to care for patients and how to treat not just their illness but to treat the whole person. So that's persisted and is part of our fabric, and I think makes us special.
Speaking of bringing two systems together, you're just finalizing another merger between Trinity Health and Loyola University Health System out of Chicago. Writing the check, Terry, signing the contract, that's the easy part of bringing a couple of systems together. Bringing these two families together is the much harder part. How do you do that?
Well, I think you do it by a lot of personal contact, and I mentioned Joe Swedish. For several months, he worked very closely with the president of Loyola, Father Michael Garanzini. I've worked closely with a number of the physicians that have been there, and I had the opportunity to meet them and appreciate all that they're doing. And I think what we've both found out as we learn more about each other is that we can both learn from each other, that there are certainly things that they do that we would like to learn more about and adopt as best practices, but there's also things that we've done that they're anxious to learn about. So I think it's one of those mergers or marriages, if you'd like, that really is a win-win type of situation for both parties.
Trinity Health's mission is, and I quote, "We serve together in Trinity Health in the spirit of the gospel to heal body, mind, and spirit, to improve the health of our communities, and to steward the resources entrusted to us." So we serve together in the spirit of the gospel. Dr. Terry O'Rourke, what does that mean to you and to your team on a daily basis?
Well, I think serve together is an important lead statement that we use the skill and scale, as we like to think of it, of our system and all of the people in our system to deliver the absolute very best care that we can every day, every place, every time. So that working together makes all of us better than any one of our sites would be individually. The spirit of gospel goes back to our heritage, our Catholic heritage, the sisters, their commitment to the values, and I think says that we're more about just treating that illness, that we're there for that whole person and attend to their spiritual needs as well as their physical needs.
Trinity Health is the fourth largest Catholic health system in America. As such, you're a faith-based health system. How do you balance this mission along with government intervention, ever-growing, and the need to be profitable as well?
Yeah. Well, the last line in our mission statement says to be a good steward of our resources. And we have to be mindful of that. We have to be profitable. Our 45,000 employees depend on us to get a paycheck at the end of the month so they can take care of their families. And we need to be profitable to be able to buy new equipment and to have the latest technology for our patients. So we can't say it doesn't matter what something costs or it doesn't matter how much we spend. It does matter because it's directly linked to quality. On the other hand, I like to think that high quality is also a very cost-effective care. So those two go together. How we do with the government, I think we do like everybody else does, that the government is both a blessing in some ways and a challenge in others. Many of our patients have their insurance through Medicare or other governmental programs, so we appreciate the fact that they compensate us for the care that we deliver for those patients. Sometimes we get regulations that we might otherwise do differently, but they're good people and mean the best for us, and so we learn to work with them and do well with them.
We're talking to Dr. Terry O'Rourke, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Terry O'Rourke, the Executive Vice President and Chief Clinical Officer of Trinity Health. Doctor, what does a Chief Clinical Officer do every day?
Well, it's a relatively new position and a new title for me. I was the Chief Medical Officer up until about a year ago. But what we saw was that some of our clinical services were somewhat siloed and the different specialties were somewhat isolated from each other. And that's not what our patients want. Our patients want to get good care. They don't want to just get good nursing care or good care from their physician or good drugs from their pharmacist and so on. They want to get care that's coordinated and integrated. So I was promoted to the Chief Clinical Officer, and most of the clinical services, in fact, all of them, report up to me so that I can coordinate and make sure that all of our initiatives are multidisciplinary and are focused on our patients. And I think all of the people that I work with appreciate that and enjoy that. There was a little hesitancy at first from some of them, but we're seeing good results and improved care. So I think they all are very supportive.
The internet has revolutionized how we live. And more I listen to people who have a parent or a child or a mate with a major illness. They jump on the internet, they become experts, and they're telling the physician and the hospital what to do. How has that changed?
Good and bad. Good in the sense that I think the more information people have, the better they understand their illness, the better they understand the options of treatment. The problem with the internet is that there are good sources of information and there are bad sources. I mean, you can find anything you want that somebody can put on the internet and say that standing on your head for 20 minutes every day will cure hypertension or something like that. So that I think if I could caution people, it would be to be careful of the resources that there are. Go to resources that you know. Most of the health systems in this area have their own web pages and are good resources. There's national resources from places like the Mayo Clinic or the National Cancer Institute or the CDC for infectious diseases and so on. So to the extent that you get information from reputable sources, it is wonderful. I get a lot of my medical information from the internet. I read about something and I want more questions, I do a search and can find all the things that I used to have to go to the library and spend the day collecting books. Now I can pull up in a few minutes and have that information at your fingertips is wonderful.
One goal by a lot of people is a paperless, seamless, electronic health records. Will it ever happen?
Yes, and we're very close to that at many of our sites. And there are some wonderful advantages to it. For instance, that record is available not only at the hospital where you receive the care, but can be accessed in our system at any of our hospitals or transferred electronically around the country. Somebody's had some x-rays in California a year ago, and if they're digital x-rays, we can have those x-rays sent to us electronically. So there's some wonderful things about it. It gives us the ability to help the physician and the nurse that are caring for patients to be prompted about certain things, to be reminded that you have an allergy to medication or I have an allergy to a medication. So there's some wonderful components to it. It's harder to use in some places. If you needed a prescription for a pill or something, I can pull up a prescription pad, and even in my bad handwriting, scribble out that prescription in about 20 seconds. If I have to log onto the computer and type your name in and type the medication and so on, it takes a couple of minutes. So there's some things like that slow down the delivery of care. On the other hand, prescription is legible. The pharmacist can read it. There'll be a check in there that if I make a mistake either in spelling the medication or writing the wrong dose, it'll prompt me with a "Is this what you really want?" type of correction. So it is no question. It's an advancement, and I think we're just beginning to see all the benefits from it.
When your dad was practicing, when you were young, very young, and practicing, doctors were 7 by 24.
Yeah.
That's changed. Now doctors want to have a life with their family. How has that changed these healthcare systems?
I think, again, for the better. One is the influence of female physicians. Half of the graduates of medical school now are women, and women bring a different perspective. And many of them want to have that balanced lifestyle so that they can have a family and be with their children and not be constantly at the hospital, as I remember my father was. And I think many of the male physicians of the younger age group have many of the same aspirations. So I think it is better. And I think they come to work rested and invigorated. It does mean that we need more doctors because if they only work 35 hours a week instead of 65 hours a week, they're not as productive. So we need more physicians or more providers of health care. But I think it's a good trend.
You talk about that 50% of the future doctors are women and that they bring a different perspective. Talk to us about the pluses of female doctors.
Yeah. Well, probably I'm the wrong one to be talking to you. I think the first one should be a woman who would tell you that many women would prefer to see another woman instead of a male. And in many of the specialties, such as obstetrics and gynecology, or breast diseases, majority of the physicians now are women. So I think that is one plus. Women in general, I think, are more conversational, and I don't know exactly what I mean by that, but I think they engage patients, they talk to their patients, they develop that relationship with their patients that some of my male colleagues don't do. Some do it very well. But men and women are different, and I think women bring a set of skills. People talk about women's intuition, and I think that is real, but I think there's a lot of male physicians that are intuitive as well. And I think they learn from each other. I think that when you have that first female come into your practice, the practice changes. And the male physicians adopt some of the good things that they do.
Your mom was a nurse?
Uh-huh.
Your wife Mary was a nurse?
Both.
Talk to us about the role nurses play in healthcare systems today.
Well, it's not just healthcare systems. I'll tell you that both with my mother and with my wife, when people would get sick in the neighborhood, they wouldn't call my father or myself. They would call my mother or my wife and ask them what they should do. That's that connectivity with the nurse part. For patients in the hospital, just ask any patient who's in the hospital, especially if they're there for several days, who they remember. And they'll talk to you about two or three nurses that were just wonderful and were there all the time and caring for them attending to their needs and explaining things to them, so that the nursing care for our patients is critical. And the physicians are there for a relatively small part of the time. They play a very important role in terms of diagnosis and directing care. But for the most part, the nurses are the ones that carry out those orders and deliver the care.
We're talking to Dr. Terry O'Rourke, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Dr. Terry O'Rourke, who received the Sword of Hope Award from the American Cancer Society in 1992 and was recognized as one of the best doctors in America in 2000. Tall cotton. Terry, you have a great way about you. You're AKA Robert Young, Dr. Marcus Welby, MD. You're better looking than that guy was. Where did you get that aura you have of you're in good hands with Dr. O'Rourke?
Well, thank you, first of all. That's a compliment. I grew up watching Marcus Welby and enjoyed his manner and his style of taking care of patients. I think my father was a major influence. And, in those days, back in the 50s, we didn't have the emergency medical system that we have now. And it was not uncommon there'd be a knock on the door and somebody would say, "We need you to come quick, you know, Aunt so-and-so doesn't look good," and I'd tag along with them. And many, many times the person that we were asked to see had, in fact, died. And seeing how he treated them with sensitivity and compassion, it's a great, great learning lab for me. And then I had the fortune to work with wonderful professors as I went through medical school and even the people that I practiced with, learning all along the way how you talk to somebody, how you tell somebody that they've got cancer, or how you tell somebody that their child was seriously injured in an automobile accident. Take some experience for that, and I think you get better with time. And focusing on the people and trying to be a good listener and understanding what it is that they want to talk about, what it is they want to hear. All those things are important.
One common thing that I've observed from older people who have stayed healthy and vibrant is that they've stayed grateful. Mm-hmm. And another thing I admire you for is you're grateful. How does one stay grateful?
Well, I think you look around you and you see others that are less fortunate than yourself, and you say, how did I get to be so lucky? How did I be able to have a wonderful family, a wonderful life, and wonderful friends, and wonderful parents, and so on, and realize that so many other people don't have that blessing, if you would, and to be thankful for it, and to be recognize that you were given something and that you ought to do something with it.
In one of our lunches together, we talked about that you see young kids in a restaurant now, four of them, they got their iPads, etc., and they're texting, maybe even to each other, and not talking at all.
Yeah.
And you talked about the value of relationships,
yeah,
if you will.
It's all about relationships. And I think as I've learned more and become more involved in some of the higher levels of administration and learned how decisions are made, the more impressed I am that it's about those relationships, people you can trust and people that you can rely on for their advice. And I don't think you get that with a text message. Maybe I'm too old to appreciate how that comes through, but I think you get it by talking to people, spending time with them, learning about them, having them learn about you, and building that bridge so that when you need something or they need something, you're there and able to respond.
Could you share with us the story that you told about George W. Bush meeting with Vladimir Putin in the Oval Office?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be on a program with President Bush about a year or so after he finished his presidency. And he talked about an episode that happened where Putin had come to the White House and met with him in the Oval Office. And President Bush's dog, Barney, who was kind of a mixed breed, I guess would be the polite word to say for that dog, was asleep on the floor. And Putin never recognized the dog was there or paid any attention to him. And several months later, President Bush was visiting Putin in Russia and went to his Dacha. And before they went into the home, Putin took him around back and showed him his prize Russian wolfhound and said, "My dog is bigger, better, and faster than your dog." And President Bush said at that time he realized that the Russian premier or president was greatly competitive and that they didn't want to be collaborative in their work with the United States, and that he basically changed our policy towards Russia based on what Putin said about his dog. So it's relationships. It's not all the thick binders of analysis that they got from the State Department.
Now, some listeners that think highly of President Bush would say that's a great story. The other ones that say, oh, that says that's volumes about the guy. So, take your choice. Terry O'Rourke, you grew up in Detroit, and then you went west to Colorado for 30 years. Now you're back for 3 years. Tell us, from your set of eyes, what you see in Detroit and Southeast Michigan now?
Well, I think, first of all, Detroit has a bad reputation. You know, you're someplace else and you say, where are you from? And you say, I'm from Detroit. And some people kind of raise their eyes and so on. Excuse me. But Detroit is still a wonderful town. And there are wonderful people here. And I think how this city survived the economic downturn and the downturn in the automobile industry speaks volumes about the character of this city. Having said that, it is sad to drive into the city and see the abandoned buildings and the remnants of things that happened a long time ago. It's sad to see that the automobile industry is not the dominant force that it was 40 years ago, that some of the foreign automobile companies lead us in sales and so on. I have nostalgia for those memories of the great American cars, and they're still great American cars. It's just that they don't own the automobile world like they used to. So still a great city. Enjoy being here.
But those big three are coming back.
They are
coming back. They're doing well. What role has faith played in your own personal life, Terry O'Rourke?
Well, I am a Catholic, and I grew up going to Catholic schools and had the fortune to go to Jesuit schools, UD High Jesuit here. And I think the values that I learned stay with you. And those mentors and brothers and priests that taught me not just how to do algebra and physics and so on, but how to live your life were very important.
Last question, as our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Well, first one is stay in school. Get all you can from your education and shoot high. Think that anything that you dream about is attainable, and then work hard to get it.
Dr. Terry O'Rourke, you're a great asset that's come home. We're losing a lot of young kids. We got to get them back. This is a great place. It's got a great future. So thanks for coming back. Thanks for all you do. And most importantly, the way in which you do it. God bless.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.